there were quite a significant number of funds and superannuation products that were basically performing worse than if you'd just sort of invested in the stock market index, you know, or pretty much, you know,
or put your money under a bed.
Yeah.
Put your money under a bed.
If you
pretty much just put
that.
It in a savings account and said, you know,
leave it there,
you'd actually be outperforming these.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Australian Politics Live. I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and I am also the host of this show. This week, I've grabbed my two favourite econo-nerds. Is that even a word?
It is now.
Why not? Anyway, Greg Jericho, my Guardian colleague. Say hello, Greg.
Hello.
And Shane Wright, our neighbour, predominantly.
Hello, Murph.
Also sometimes, actually all the time, the West Australian's economics editor.
Only on good days.
And you're probably sort of doing lots of politics now too.
Yeah, I am.
Yes,
I
am. And that too. Anyway, yes, Shane, he's here too. And this week we're going to talk about...
the economy.
Oh,
hey!
Staggeringly. Yes, we're going to talk about the economy. Now, why are we doing that? Well, we do it semi-regularly and it's always one of the most fun episodes I do on the show. But this week we actually do have a news hook. We have new GDP figures. Also, over the past fortnight, we've had some new proposals on superannuation, which are obviously worthy of discussion because everyone in the known universe seems to be jumping up and down about them in one shape or form. And we haven't addressed that yet in the show, so we're going to do that this episode. So let's crack on, chaps. Shane, the economy.
Apparently, it grew by full percentage point in the first 3 months of this year for an annual rate of 3.1%. So if you've got a leaderboard at home showing world nations and where they are, Australia's up near the top now, like chasing very hard.
Yeah, what happened? What happened?
The story is a bit of exports, particularly LNG, which is for the Guardian listenership, may not be the cleanest industry going out there, but
particularly since the LNG industry added substantially to greenhouse gas emissions in the quarter. But anyway, moving on from that.
That's right. Apart from the editorial comment from Murph.
Yes, sorry. Moving on.
That the export sector is growing strongly off all of those new plants that are either in place or floating off the coastline of particularly Queensland, NT and Western Australia. And also coal exports jumped, another fun area of policy debate in The Guardian, because cyclones last quarter knocked exports out of Queensland. No cyclones this year really so far, so exports really bounced. So you've had that side of things. Businesses have run up a few inventories, which are a positive to the national accounts. You had governments spending up a bit of money. Again, we're seeing the NDIS is a key factor in this. I don't think at the time there was much debate particularly within the coalition circles about how good this would be to the national growth story or national employment, but that's how it's playing out. And our soggy consumers are getting a little soggier. That's the other side of the national accounts. You couldn't write economics without being on one hand or positive and then on the other hand being negative.
Yes, on the other hand. What do we think about an economy powered by LNG exports and the NDIS, Greg? Just as a concept.
Well, apart from the carbon tax offsets that we're missing out on.
Yes.
One of the problems with being very reliant on exports, especially when you look at figures in a seasonally adjusted term, which is what everyone sort of talks about, is it gets very erratic. They bounce up and down a lot. Last quarter, net exports actually detracted from growth. This quarter, they were the strongest power of growth. So, whereas if you're mainly growing off the back of household consumption and private investment in buildings and roads and various things like that, that generally gets you a bit more stable kind of growth going. And that's the kind of growth we had in the mining boom period of the early part of this century.
Because it was accompanied with an investment boom.
Yeah. We weren't relying on big jumps in exports at that point, whereas now that is a bit more of the player, and that means that things can be a bit more erratic. In the trend terms, which if you're an economist, you might sort of say the trend is your friend, things were a bit more calmer. The economy didn't grow by 1%, it was more 0.7%, which is basically what it's been doing for the past sort of four quarters. In annual terms, it was still below 3%. It hasn't been above 3% in trend terms for nearly, I think, over five years, just about. It's, so it's the seasonally adjusted figures are a bit beguiling, and you can understand why Scott Morrison wants to talk all about them, because that's the nice number this quarter. But really, what you, when you dig into them, as Shane was talking about, with that, you know, one hand good, one hand bad, households really aren't seeing much of this. I mean, in a total sense, yes, you know, things like compensation to employees is growing in a total sense, but in an average sense, it's still very weak, and that's because of where, you know, the growth in the economy is coming. Mining exports. Exports are great for company profits, but not for jobs, because you don't need to employ a heck of a lot of people once you've built the mine and you're starting to dig it up and send it all out. And the other big growth industries are health and aged care and things associated with NDIS, and that's not a big high-paying sector, even though it's now, with the NDIS notionally through the private sector, it's still basically, you know, a public sector-driven industry. And so, you know, household incomes in real terms and the compensation of employees in real terms is still falling and still below where it was, you know, back in 2012.
So wages still not a great story.
Still not a great story, although the government is trying to talk up the compensation of employees, which takes in both wages and the number of workers. And that's important to the budget. I think the government is actually setting itself up for a fall in this space, because it keeps referring to last year, which was a record year in terms of number of jobs, about 417,000. But we're now into May, and the annual growth is coming down. It's down to about 332,000.
Employment.
Total employment. So there's definitely, and it had to come somewhere along the line, that stellar growth just couldn't continue. And then you project into the future of how much more job ads are actually saying, we're probably not going to see much change in unemployment in total. And then you get into that mix of employment, which, as Greg says, the focus on, like, around health. We don't need a lot of doctors and anaesthetists. We need a lot of people who can lift elderly patients, clean their bums, that sort of thing.
For sure.
It's not a well-paying part of the health sector. And that's what we're seeing. And then you're getting into that mix. There's a lot more part-time employment in that area, because there's a lot of women in that sector. As we've reflected previously, Murph, women just aren't paid well enough.
We better not get in that cul-de-sac, otherwise Murph will never get out of it. So,
that's right.
Yes.
But hey, we drove past and waved at the cul-de-sac.
That's right. We did. We waved in convivial fashion. Okay. So just an organising question then. Do we think the economy has turned the corner, Greg?
Oh, well.
Because obviously.
Spit it out. Come on, man.
No, I mean, if you mean in terms of, are we going back to, for example, 3.1% is the annual growth at the moment. Now, that used to be average. You know, you got 3.1%. That was pretty much what you aimed to get to make sure the unemployment rate didn't go up. It didn't go down, but that kept it steady. Now it's kind of like, wow, we're growing faster than we have for, you know, 4 or 5 years. Suddenly this is
21 months, in fact, that's when it was last at 3.1. In fact, it's six years since we've had more than we haven't had consecutive quarters of 1% for 6 years. And we had a run of five quarters, and haven't been there since.
Well, that's why I'm asking the question, because it's sort of like we're out of the way of that. We're a long way out of the way of that. Obviously, in Australia, we avoided the recession and prolonged downturn that other economies had, but the economy's sort of, you know, been in a flat patch for quite a period of time. So
it's the beige economy, but beige is the new black.
Yeah.
Taupe. Isn't it taupe?
Taupe. It's always been beige.
No, no, but is that actually how you pronounce that word?
Who knows? Just say beige.
I mean, it's the sense that, you know, the 90s and the early 2000s were around the world sort of referred to as the Great Moderation, because we kind of left the boom and bust cycle we thought behind us. You know, we'd unlocked the secret sauce of how to just have nice steady growth. And yes, in Australia we have not at least had that sort of technical recession, to use that horrible term. But I don't think we're kind of in the Great Moderation at the moment. We're kind of in the Great Mediocre almost.
It's a sense of
now, if we can get 2.5% annual growth, that's kind of where, and it's that sense of, going back to what I said earlier, where the growth is coming from. It's not coming from this huge, strong private investment, household spending. Households, used to spend, around 4.5% on average a year. Now around 2.5%. And there's no sign of that about to kick off. It's improved. It's better than it used to be 2-3 years ago, but we seem very much, I'd say, in a rut.
And all of this while the official cash rate's at 1.5.
Yes.
And I think Scott Morrison today talked about, but this was a separate part of his press conference, was referencing the cash rate and how...
The bit that wasn't in the gender
household saving.
Sack.
Yeah, not in the cul-de-sac, but he was talking about household saving, and that's why we've got cash rate at 1.5. Yes, we've had the cash rate at 1.5 for 22 months now. Mm. And the best we've got household consumption is at 2.9 and edging down on the trend, and growth at 3.1. Now, that's an indictment. It really is. And so as much as you want to keep you're talking about how the world economy has changed, we've got to a position where a cash rate which is at its equal lowest since 1959, Eisenhower's in the White House. And for kids out there, Eisenhower was a former World War II general who was the president of the United States for 2 terms before JFK. There's your history lesson for the day.
Pre-Beyonce,
who built the highways across the United States, that system. Anyway, but that's where interest rates are now. And that our great and this great smile on ScoMo talking about the Ute-led recovery.
Oh my God!
Mm. And it's off 1.5% cash rate. That tells you something.
Yeah. Well. How do we? Before we get onto super, we must get onto super in a sec. But so how do we? Is it a matter of confidence returning? If people start to see economic growth returning.
They need to see wages going up.
Well,
I think it's just so simple.
Yeah.
They could start with me and Greg and yourself. Wage
start
rises
with us.
For us.
That'd be good.
I mean, governments love talking.
I will spend for my country.
Paul Krugman refers to the confidence fairy. You know, the sense of, if we get business confidence up and consumer confidence up, then that'll power everything. And the reality is, yes, people, it is better for businesses and households to think things are getting better than to be thinking that they're going to be getting worse. But
cash is better.
People might feel, and the problem is that wages growth has been crap for so long now that, yes, people are now in a nice position going, I feel like my job's secure. So they're not worried. You'll often stop spending because you think, shit, I might lose my job. Mm. So we better not, go on that trip or spend on things. We're not really in that situation now. It's a case of, my job's safe, but wages aren't going up, so we're not going to be spending. Or what the figures show is we're going to save less and keep kind of spending. To keep spending at that growing at 2.9%, what they've basically been doing is reducing how much they save.
Yeah.
It is very sexy when Greg uses economic jargon like crap.
It's a technical term, but I've got my honours degree in economics, so I can use that term.
So
I'm licensed.
Let's summarise on the economy now, chaps. So basically, growth has returned
for three months.
But until wages improve, the lived economy for ordinary people such as ourselves, it feels no different.
Beige.
Yeah, mm, beige. Yeah. All right, beautiful. Superannuation now, let's do it.
Not so beige.
No. Well, people got a bit technicolour about this, which is, I always admire people who get really, really excited about superannuation. I just sort of, I'm quite terrified by superannuation. It's just a true confession. I read, no, mm-hmm. sort of one, it's really funny because I'm not, I'm reasonably economically literate. But it's like, but super, for some reason I just look at it and I think, oh my God.
I have been spending my time giving advice to people in the office and over in the political bureau here in Canberra and back home in WA
yeah.
of how to get your super organised.
Yeah, no, I don't know why it's such a blind spot. It's ridiculous. Anyway,
that's why we have super, because people, and
you can
this
set
is the whole
forget.
Thing. You,
yeah.
but people don't think that far ahead, which is super is thinking decades into the future. So that's why it's really scary. I don't know. And if I make a mistake, I'm going to be selling the cat to survive.
Yes.
As opposed to why we went down this whole avenue is that people, because of the inherent problems in the human condition.
Yes, because we don't. Yeah,
we don't look
we don't
beyond
plan ahead.
Next week, let alone, that's why we have diaries, just to keep track of what's happening next week, let alone way out into the future.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's begin at the beginning. The Productivity Commission has had something to say on this front. Greg, what has the Productivity Commission said?
Well, the Productivity Commission has basically had a huge bit of research into actually how superannuation works, how it is working, and how people interact with it. And basically what they've found is going off on essentially what Shane said about how people don't know about super, don't think about super, and we don't think about, you know, our future. And that was why the government brought in the compulsory superannuation guarantee and all that, so that we were forced to do it. It was, you know, getting taken straight out of our wages. But the problem is that didn't change us having any more knowledge or care or interest in the super. And surprise, surprise.
People are choosing dud funds.
Well, they're not
or
choosing it.
Defaulted into
yeah,
dud
surprise,
funds.
Surprise, surprise. Some of the funds have been run in perhaps not the optimal way and delivering.
Well, optimal for someone. Not for the person. Yeah,
for the person.
Funny
the
funny it is.
Said,
just
hey,
just not the beneficiary.
You know, you might be shocked that a financial institution which has realised that people aren't paying attention to what they're doing with their money have decided to make some hay out of
maximise
that.
Maximise their utility from somebody else's
so
income.
Okay.
Yeah.
What they've basically found is that people really have no idea which super fund they go into. It's generally linked to their employment situation. That brings with it a number of problems. One is that it's a bit of a lottery, whether you get a good fund or not, and also it leads to multiple funds. And they've found that...
people having multiple accounts.
Yeah, because say you get a part-time job when you're at school, you get a superannuation fund. Then you go to uni or you get a real job, you know, not just work on weekends, you get a real job and suddenly you've got a different account, different super fund, but you've still got that old one, but you've forgotten about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that actually about a third, around 10 million superannuation funds are these unwanted multiple funds that they either had to open because they got a new job or they've forgotten about because they've got a new job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's costing, you know, big money in fees because fees and insurance premiums, because even if you're not contributing to these funds, especially on the retail side of things, the fees and insurance premiums still get taken out. And what they also did was looked at the performance of funds and found that there were quite a significant number of funds and superannuation products that were basically performing worse than if you'd just sort of invested in the stock market index, you know, or mm-hmm. pretty much, you know,
or put your money under a bed.
Yeah.
Put your money under a bed.
If
you pretty much just put it in a savings account and said, you know,
leave it there.
You'd actually be outperforming these.
Okay.
And so what they have proposed is to, instead of it being a lottery and instead of it being you get a new job, you get a new fund, when you start work, you have one default fund and you get to pick which one you go into, and you choose that from a list of, say, 10 funds, the 10 best performing funds, and that's your default fund for life unless you decide to go
do
somewhere
else.
And once we get there, as Shane will no doubt be able to talk about, that sets off a whole sort of political and commercial firestorm.
Because 9 of the top 10 performing funds at the moment are industry funds, mm-hmm. not union funds. They are industry funds yep. run half and half between industry groups and union movement. The retail sector, for profit, has just failed to deliver superannuation returns within bull's roars of the industry funds. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take much to think this through. Like, there is the ideological warriors are saying that it's something to do with these terrible trade unions. No. Industry funds are not for profit versus retail funds, yeah. which are for profit.
Yeah.
Therein is, at the heart of it, is the way that these funds have splintered between those who don't have to try to make money for their employers, aka the big banks and AMP,
yep.
versus ones who just have to return funds to their members. And that's always going to be a problem for the retail funds. And the retail funds themselves are being eaten on the default funds, which are the biggest part of super, and the growth of self-managed super funds, where yes. these were people who ordinarily might have ended up in retail and they've gone, hold on,
yeah,
we can
really
do a better job than the retail
yeah,
guys.
Even I can do better
They can't. And there's a lot of examples of SMSFs, their fee structures are much higher. But some of that's just time and people just going, well, I'll wear it. But you're seeing that there's an issue around the proposal from the PC is that that most people get their first job 15, 16. Mm. Now, they've modelled this off someone being 21.
Yeah.
Like, at least I could get dressed at 21. At 15, it's a very tough issue to get your mind around.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of questions I've got, and this could be bare of little brain questions. But
or is this you looking for free financial advice?
No, because my super is okay. I fortunately am in an industry super fund, so it's all fine. No, I don't know if I need financial advice. Maybe I do. But anyway, that's another conversation.
If you're asking the question, well, yes.
No. I've just got basic questions, right? Just basic questions. So I'm totally all for a list of high-performing funds that my 15-year-old, when he gets a job at the IGA, gets access to, right, and has a look at them and makes a choice and bolts on in. But where I think, hang on a sec, well, one, it's the 15-year-olds who aren't getting any advice from anyone.
Except for Mama Murph.
Well, exactly, and we know that's not necessarily great. So there's that, kids who don't have advice. But then there's the set and forget thing, because the top 10 performing funds this year may not be the top 10 performing funds next
this
year.
This is over 10-year periods that we're talking about.
Over 10-year periods.
That's what they're looking at. And there's no difference between the 10-year performance and the 20-year performance.
And these
funds have just got absolute, they are the Donald Bradmans of the retail funds, that you know that they will go out and they will score a century every 3 innings.
Right.
As opposed to the Bruce Laird funds, who never scored a century even though he opened for Australia for many years.
Yep.
Never going to get there.
No.
So that's that Bradman, Laird.
I've got it.
Yeah, the productivity
I've been looking at this for 2 weeks.
It was very, very strong on looking at the long-term returns. Their model as well is that every 4 or 5 years, the panel, the independent panel, and there's a few issues there, but would revisit the list. And should your fund drop off the list, there would be recourse
Would they tell you if your fund dropped off the list?
It would be fairly major news, but I'd say there would have to be processes in place. But certainly the biggest issue is not so much whether it drop out of that top 10 best in show list, but whether it's suddenly became one of the dud ones.
Yes, exactly.
And that's where
you need a warning of some sort.
But also that's where their recommendation is to try and get rid of these dud funds from the actual industry and have APRA be able to take away accreditation of them being a MySuper fund and being able to, and as soon as you lose that, you're stuffed. You really can't get in, you're really off on the fringe of the industry.
And it's a case of
if that was to happen, which they believe would be very rare because, as as Shane was saying, the best performing over the last decade have been the best performing over the last 20 years. And, you know, that you can just about count them. But should something go totally skew-whiff, there would be recourse to say, right, everyone get out of this and get into something else. But really, right. One of the big issues is they're trying to get rid of the dud funds and essentially saying, wanting that performance to become very much transparent and the sense of if you're not performing well, either start performing well, you know, find out what you're doing wrong or merge with someone else or get out.
Yes. Mm. Oh, well, gosh, that's a rather abrupt note to end on.
It was very abrupt.
But,
it was.
But anyway, let's end there. It's obvious there's probably another conversation in this, which we may do when this moves along in the sense of the government obviously reaching a view on it. But anyway, that's got to be it for now.
Just one final thing.
Except for what Greg's saying.
The big thing on when the next sort of talk about this, it will occur after these superannuation funds have fronted up at the Royal Commission and therein will be many a...
Yes.
Issue, yes. No, well, that's a good point. Okay, yes. Well, anyway, there you are. There's your economics lot for the week. Thank you so much, as always, to Shane and Greg for joining me. Thank you to Miles Martignoni and his production team in Sydney for producing this pod every week. We love you. Thank you so much. Don't forget to subscribe if you like the listening. That is quite important to the viability and long-term health of the project. Do subscribe via iTunes or your favourite podcast app. Until we return, well, what will we say? Go with your super gods.
Go with the super gods, yes.